Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, September 17th, 2020. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Parents, Open Unit 5 Schools, by Kelsey Watznauer. Normal. McLean County Unit 5 parents spoke out Wednesday night, asking for the students to return to school. I'm here to beg you to believe in our kids and our teachers because they can do this, said Heidi Voorhees, the parent of two Unit 5 children. 17 parents and four educators addressed the school board during Wednesday's meeting at Normal Community West High School. Several parents spoke of the frustrations they have experienced with their kids learning from home in the last 3 weeks, including technology issues that interrupt education, financial strain involved with additional child care, physical effects of prolonged screen time, mental and emotional health struggles, and loss of motivation causing students to fall behind. Crystal Larkin said she had to leave her job so she could be home with her children while they learn from home. We are endangering our children by doing this. They need to be back in school, and the district needs to figure out the best way possible to make this happen as soon as possible, she said. No more excuses. We need action. Lindsay Dickinson, president of the Unit 5 Education Association, said a disturbing narrative has been spread by the district administrators and members of the school board, blaming teachers and staff for the schools remaining closed. On behalf of UFEA, I want to state first unequivocally, we want to be back in school in person with our students and colleagues, she said, adding that the teachers' union's only position has been that they want to be involved in the decision-making process and that those decisions need to prioritize the health and safety of our students and staff. At the beginning of the meeting, Superintendent Kristen Weichel said the administration is working to determine the health metrics officials will use to decide if in-person learning will resume in the second quarter. We have been working on a plan to get our students back in person after the first quarter. Our hope is that if our metrics remain stable and/or improve, that we will be able to transition to hybrid model for second quarter, she said. Weichel said more details about the plan likely will be released at the board's next meeting on September 29th. She did say that under the plan, parents would still be able to opt for 100% remote learning. Molly Emery said she and other Unit 5 parents deserve transparency from the district and now is the time for details. The next story is entitled, McLean County Positivity Rate Dips, 3,003 cases total. Livingston County sees fifth COVID death, by Paul Sweech. Bloomington. McLean County's COVID-19 positivity rate continued its decline Wednesday, as 28 more residents were diagnosed with the disease. Meanwhile, a fifth Livingston County resident has died of the novel virus. The resident was a man in his 80s who had underlying health conditions and lived in a long-term care facility, said Aaron Fogarty, Livingston County Health Department Health Education and Marketing Director. In McLean County, Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight reported on Wednesday 28 new COVID cases, bringing the county's totals to 124 new cases so far this week and 3,003 since March 19th. But the county's 7-day positivity rate, the measurement of new COVID cases as a percentage of tests for the week ending Tuesday, declined to 6.1% from 6.7% the day before. The rate, until earlier this week, had consistently exceeded 8% for 2 weeks, which is one reason why the county has been on the Illinois Department of Public Health's warning list for the past 2 weeks. State health officials will issue their next warning list Friday. McLean County's cumulative positivity rate of the more than 62,500 tests conducted since March remained 4.8% on Wednesday, McKnight reported. The county reported that 1,348 were in home isolation on Wednesday, 7 more than the day before. 8 people were hospitalized, 1 more than on Tuesday. 2 of the 8 were in intensive care units. A total of 1,629 people are considered recovered from the virus, 20 more than on Tuesday. 18 McLean County residents have died of COVID. The most recent death was reported last Thursday. 5 residents and 4 staff members of the Loft Rehabilitation and Nursing, 510 Broadway, Normal, have tested positive for COVID, confirmed Corey Rao, the Loft Vice President of Business Development. The residents had no COVID symptoms and are in isolation in a wing of the long-term care facility dedicated to residents who test positive for the virus, Rose said. The Loft has been testing residents and staff following IDPH and County Health Department protocols, and the 5 residents are the first to have tested positive, Rose said. According to the IDPH website, the McLean County long-term care facility with the most COVID cases so far is Bloomington Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center, 1925 South Main Street, Bloomington, which has had 59 confirmed cases and 11 deaths. Illinois State University reported on Wednesday that during the previous 7 days, 71 students had tested positive on campus, of 1,392 students tested, for a positivity rate of 5.1%. That continued a decline in the rate that began earlier this week after double-digit rates were reported in the previous 2 weeks. Since testing began on campus on August 17th, 1,392 students have tested positive of 8,025 students tested, ISU reported Wednesday. That's a positivity rate of 17.3% compared with the 20% rate reported last week. But McKnight has said that any possible COVID cases resulting from ISU students gathering on September 9th to see YouTube personalities, the Nelk Boys, and from Labor Day gatherings may not appear for up to 14 days after exposure. Other central Illinois counties. Tazewell County reported 33 new cases, bringing their new total to 1,475 cases. LaSalle County reported 15 new cases, meaning their total is 1,537. Logan County reported 11 new cases, bringing their total to 412. Livingston County reported 4 new cases, bringing their tally to 294. Statewide, IDPH reported 1,941 new cases and 35 additional deaths, including the death in Livingston County. Since March, 266,151 Illinoisans have been diagnosed with COVID, and 8,367 have died. There were 565 people tested Tuesday at the site operated by Reditus Laboratories at McLean County Fairgrounds, 1106 Interstate Drive, Bloomington, officials said. That site, open to anyone who can perform the nasal self-swab test, operates 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. Among other COVID-19 testing sites, are a mobile site outside Ferrero USA, 2502 Bike Road, Bloomington, which will be open 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. Thursday, and a mobile site outside 103 South Buchanan Street, Hayworth, which will be open 9 a.m. to noon Thursday. Here's a story headlined, New West Bloomington Aldi Opening Thursday. Maple Hill Road site, bigger, offers more than Wiley location. By Annalisa Trofimik. Bloomington. A new Aldi is scheduled to open Thursday off of Market Street. The 907 Maple Hill Road location will replace the store at 1025 Wiley Drive, set to close on Wednesday. Aldi Dwight Division Vice President Heather Moore said the new store will be 12,515 square feet and will have open ceilings, natural lighting, environmentally friendly building materials, and ample refrigerator space. One of the main reasons we relocated our Bloomington store was to provide our shoppers a bigger store to accommodate an expanded product selection, Moore said in an email. The new store will be open daily from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Grocery delivery and curbside pickup will continue to be available at the Bloomington and Normal locations. Aldi has been a part of the Bloomington community since 1991, and with this brand new store, we are excited to provide an improved shopping experience for our loyal Bloomington customers, Moore said. Moore said the company is expanding other Central Illinois stores, including projects in Peoria. They recently completed renovations in 8 other locations. The first Aldi opened in 1961 in Germany. The next story is entitled, Heartland Extends Faculty Contracts 1 Year, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Heartland Community College has extended the contracts of its part-time and full-time faculty to avoid going through negotiations during the COVID-19 pandemic. The 3-year contract with the Heartland Faculty Association, Local 6038 of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, which represents full-time faculty, was to expire at the end of June. Instead, the Heartland Board of Trustees on Tuesday approved a 1-year extension to June 30, 2022. It also voted to extend the contract with the Heartland Adjunct Faculty Association for 1 year, making it effective through June 30, 2023. Part-time faculty will receive 2.5% pay increases in the extended year. Full-time faculty will receive a flat dollar amount based on an average 2.5% increase, with higher paid faculty getting a lower percentage raise and lower paid faculty receiving a higher percentage, according to Rick Pierce, Provost and Vice President of Academic Affairs. Heartland President Keith Cornell said, given the unique situation of the COVID crisis, the faculty did not want to be in the midst of contract talks at this time. Heartland Board Vice Chair Jeff Flessner became chair Tuesday following the death of former board chair Greg Chadwick last week. Janet Hood was named interim vice chair. The board met in closed session to discuss filling the vacancy left by Chadwick's death. The board is going to reach out to people they know with previous experience on the board to gauge their interest in filling the vacancy until a new member is seated after the April election. A decision will be made at the next board meeting. There will be 3 seats up in the next election. 2 are for full 6-year terms, and 1 will fill the 2 years that were remaining on Chadwick's terms. The 2 trustees whose terms are expiring in 2021 are Pat Hardesty and Becky Rapp. Anyone interested in running for the board can pick up at the college's Executive Office, Suite 2000 of the Community Commons Building, 1500 West Rab Road, Normal. Petitions also can be requested by calling 309-268-8103 or by emailing laura.mai@heartland.edu. Visitors entering campus buildings are required to wear face coverings while indoors. Candidates must be at least 18 years old, a U.S. citizen, and reside within District 540 for at least 1 year as of the election. Interested people can begin circulating petitions September 22nd. The filing period is December 14th through 21st. And here's a story entitled, Children's Discovery Museum Sets Virtual Doctors in Concert, by Sierra Henry. Normal. 8 local physician musicians will perform in the annual Doctors in Concert to raise remaining funds for the Children's Discovery Museum's new Healthy Me exhibit. The concert, typically held in April, will be live streamed from the Uptown Normal Museum starting at 6 p.m. Friday. Performances feature piano, violin, and cello, and musical selections including classical, modern jazz, and American standards. We are proud of our local doctors who kept their commitment to the museum despite the unusual circumstances, said event chair Elise Albers with OSF Healthcare Children's Hospital of Illinois in a statement. We know a virtual event isn't exactly the same as an in-person concert, but I assure you the need is very much the same and the outcomes are no less important. Performing this year are Dr. Jerry Antonini, Dr. Daniel Brownstone, Dr. Carl Cortese, Dr. Joseph Liu, Dr. Daryl Looney, Dr. Susan Shepherd, and Dr. David Skillrud. Tickets are $30 for adults and $25 for seniors and students, and can be purchased at the museum's website through noon Friday. Digital access will be provided upon registration. The museum also is hosting a public silent auction. Featured items include activities for sale, as well as exhibit props and game and activity bundles. Concert and auction proceeds support the Healthy Me exhibit, which has a goal of raising a remaining $18,000 for the project. The museum has nearly met its goal, raising $13,950 as of Tuesday afternoon. Healthy Me is an immersive medical exhibit designed to teach children how to make healthy choices while promoting family and individual playtime. The exhibit will feature displays from different facets of healthcare, including a nursery, doctor's office, and an ambulance. It will also promote good healthy habits such as brushing teeth, washing hands, and making healthy food choices. Healthy Me is going to serve children and families throughout our community with important playful learning about health, wellness, and disease prevention, said Children's Discovery Museum Executive Director Beth Wissman. Earlier in the year, the museum made design adjustments to include a hand washing station that teaches children how to properly wash their hands. The change came at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, Wissman told the Pantograph. The exhibit should be completed by October, but Wissman said it is unknown when the museum can open it to the public because of the pandemic. The museum, which has been closed since mid-March, continued with construction over the summer to stay on track in hopes of offering a light at the end of the tunnel for when the museum can finally reopen. Current State of Illinois Phase 4 guidelines state museums can operate at 25% occupancy, but all hands-on or interactive exhibits must be closed down completely. Wissman said the museum is working with local and state officials to change the language of the plan to allow museums to open touch-free interactive exhibits. And the sidebar tells us, if you go, what? Doctors in concert. When? 6 p.m. Friday. Where? Children'sDiscoveryMuseum.net. Here's an item entitled, Normal Woman Killed in Motorcycle Crash by Kelsey Watznauer. Normal. Authorities on Wednesday released the name of a normal woman killed in a motorcycle crash Tuesday night. Tonya S. Roars, 47, has been identified as the passenger on a motorcycle that lost control near 1100 East 1900 North outside Carlock, McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder said. Roars was pronounced dead at 6:56 p.m. in the emergency room at Carl Broman Medical Center in Normal, and the coroner's office was notified at about 7:30 p.m. Preliminary autopsy results indicate she died of head injuries caused by the crash. This incident remains under investigation by the coroner's office and the McLean County Sheriff's Office. The next item is entitled, One Arrested in WIU Dorm Shooting by Associated Press. Chicago. A Western Illinois University student suspected of shooting and wounding his roommate in their dorm room, prompting the school to cancel classes, turned himself in to police on Wednesday afternoon, school officials said. The shooting occurred in a room at Thompson Hall on the Macomb campus at about 10:30 p.m. Tuesday, stemming from what officials said was a dispute between the two roommates. In a news release, the university said that 18-year-old Kavion Poplus turned himself in at a Chicago Police Department station and was then taken into custody by the FBI. Hours earlier, the school announced that an arrest warrant had been issued for Poplus on charges of first-degree attempted murder, aggravated battery, and aggravated discharge of a firearm. At the time, the school said that Poplus was considered armed and dangerous, but officials did not say whether a firearm was recovered when Poplus turned himself in. In addition to canceling classes at the university's main campus in Macomb, as well as the nearby campus in Moline, the school had locked down all buildings. With the arrest of Poplus, the school said that classes will resume on Thursday. But the school said that the residence halls would remain locked through the weekend to protect students' privacy. The wounded roommate, who has not been identified by the school, was taken to McDonough District Hospital in Macomb before he was transferred to another hospital. The student underwent surgery, but the school has declined to comment on his condition. And here are some public safety notices. Domestic battery. Domestic battery charges are pending against a Bloomington man. Vincent A. Randall, 28, is charged with aggravated domestic battery for an incident prosecutors said occurred on Saturday. According to court documents, he is accused of causing great bodily harm to a family or household member by repeatedly striking and kicking them, which caused injuries that included a laceration on the face, requiring medical attention. Randall was held without bond Wednesday, pending a risk assessment evaluation. Bond will be set at a review hearing Tuesday. An arraignment was scheduled for September 25th. Meth. Robin S. Colon, 45, of Bloomington, is charged with unlawful possession of 5 to 15 grams of methamphetamine with intent to deliver, unlawful possession of 5 to 15 grams of methamphetamine, and a misdemeanor for unlawful possession of drug paraphernalia. Terry J. Crumweeda, 29, of Normal, faces the same three charges. According to court documents, the drug paraphernalia they are accused of possessing was a glass pipe in both cases. Cologne and Crumweeda were released Wednesday on $50,000 personal recognizance bonds. Cologne's arraignment was scheduled for September 25th. Crumweeda's arraignment was scheduled for October 16th. And here's an item entitled, Illinois Man Sentenced for $900,000 IRS Scam. Associated Press, Worcester, Massachusetts. An Illinois man who impersonated an IRS employee and stole nearly $900,000 has been sentenced to 3 years in federal prison. Ashokumar Patel was sentenced Tuesday by a U.S. district judge to 40 months behind bars with a year of supervision after release, the Springfield Republican reported. Patel of Hoffman Estates, Illinois, formerly of Worcester and Plainville, Massachusetts, pleaded guilty in Worcester federal court to conspiracy, fraud, and money laundering charges for the scam that the U.S. Attorney's Office says made $881,662. Patel faces deportation and was ordered to pay restitution to his victims. From December 2013 to October 2014, Patel was part of a conspiracy whereby victims in the United States were contacted by individuals, primarily in India, and falsely told that they owed money to the IRS, the U.S. Attorney's Office said. The victims were told that in order to avoid imminent arrest, they had to purchase money pack or other types of prepaid stored value cards, load thousands of dollars onto the cards, and provide the serial numbers to the callers. According to prosecutors, the money was then used to buy prepaid cards that were used to purchase money orders that were deposited into various bank accounts, including Patel's. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for September 17th. Please stay tuned.